Board of Supervisors will reconvene. We're at item 7A, Office of Emergency Services. Mr. Shinoni, good morning.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. This is Brian Shinoni, I'm the Director of Emergency Services. I apologize, I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, so I apologize.
Okay.
All right, so part of your request, there has been a request for after action of the Shelley Fire, and I wanted to throw this together, throw some points out there, and hopefully for us, my staff, my office, we always like to hot wash and then after action and understand what we can do better to make each incident get that much easier, if that's a word. So for us, first of all, for us, I would absolutely 100% before we start, I would like to thank you as Board Supervisors and our staff in the EOC, and especially the CAO staff for pushing forward that disaster service worker, and that we were able to fill our EOC this year and get some great new faces in there that were really, really, really excited to be there. And more importantly, they were able to learn and glean some great information that we can use in the future. So, Shelley Fire, July 3rd, next slide, please. Started on July 3rd. It was in Forest Service land. We all are familiar with that part of it. Still investigation under investigation. 34 days of active fire suppression and fire work. For us, the EOC was activated to a level 2 for 22 days. And the primary agencies involved were the Forest Service, and then quickly with CAL FIRE jumping on board, local volunteer departments, and then setting up a fire camp in the Scott Valley area once we saw the need for the Shelley Fire. Next slide. So that is a picture captured by CAL FIRE at the height of the fire, moving over those hills, driving in yesterday. It was nice to see those same mountains now covered with snow. So such a contrast from July to now and what that looks like. Next slide. So during the Shelley Fire, it was very volatile. We were sitting through our morning meetings. At one point, we were having morning and evening meetings and afternoon meetings with myself, Chief and Sheriff, and the crews. The incident management team was really pushing forward the fact that we didn't really know where this thing was going. And that was the part. And looking back on that last picture, that was a distance away, but in every valley and every part of that fire, it was doing exactly what no one thought it was going to do. And then Shelley Fire, even speaking with CAL FIRE and some of the other staff there, there were moments there that we were scared. We were scared for the valley. I know we pushed evacuations early, and we pushed them often, and that was definitely a lesson learned that we'll continue to do. That zone was, we had 19 zones in a warning, we had 10 in an order. Population affected 1,539 and 1,100 structures under evacuation orders. We were able to use our new Ready Siskiyou platform, which was outstanding. One of the key points for us that was taken away from that, our prior system would take about 2 minutes, to about 90 seconds to 2 minutes to send an evacuation warning or order. Once we've typed it up and pushed send, the new Ready Siskiyou we're setting in about 30 to 40 seconds. From draft to send is about 30 seconds. So we did use IPAWS, which is Integrated Public Alert and Warning. That is a federally mandated program that we use it as a last ditch. If one thing that I guess I don't really want to pat myself on the back for, but we did make national news over IPAWS and the use of the IPAWS, and we've actually changed the way IPAWS is being used in wildfires. So that has been a very effective tool for us. Unfortunately, we have to practice a lot. So with that, we did use the Genesis Protect and integrated all of that into our social media posts. One of the things that we really found useful was being able to use all of those tools and all of our tools in that basket to alert the public. And then, of course, our very, basically the oldest method possible is you're going to go bang on the door and tell somebody they got to leave. So that has been, across the board, very successful. And I do want to emphasize, and I'm going to emphasize this multiple times, zero structures lost, and no deaths. So for us, huge win across the board on that. We'll talk about the burn severity here shortly. As you look, kind of keep a mental note of those evacuations and those zones out. Those will be important to note here shortly. Next slide. So final perimeter ended up being 15,520 acres, significant forest closures. We did see forest closures on all sides of it, affecting mainly all of the Quartz Valleys and Scott Valley and the National Forest on the Russian and the Marbles. PCT hikers were affected throughout the northbound and southbound. Yeah, both of those were affected, so we did tie in with the Trail Angels, and we were able to have those folks brought to the next checkpoint or whatever they found was useful. One of the things that didn't really help for them is Oregon was also on fire, so they had a pretty big, large reroute around that. But one of the things that is concerning with that is that it is a huge boost for the PCT hikers, both directions, as a stop in Etna. And as a resident at night, you see that across the summertime is that the influx of shoppers to the outdoor stores, to the bakeries, to basically across. So we saw a lot less of that this year. However, an influx back to the firefighters being at the camps were there. And next slide, please. Animal sheltering. This is probably one of our biggest sheltering operations that we've had for Siskiyou County. Huge thanks to Jim Smith and his crew. They definitely took this on and captured it. Our partners with SNP and Rescue Ranch, outstanding work with them. No questions asked at 2:30 in the morning going out and getting 80 cats at a cat sanctuary was a challenge. We had about 22 to 30 horses at any one time. There was also a horse rescue that was affected. Huge success with that, and they eat a lot. That was one of the things of, oh my gosh, how much hay we had to basically produce and bring about for all of our livestock. Again, another huge thank you to the fact that the Fort Jones area, basically everyone across the board, just stepped up and just started bringing hay as a donation because there was a challenge to get hay through the state. And then we had our two lovely donkeys who were quite the delight of everybody who went to go visit them. Next. So a burn severity map. That was requested on my behalf for the area. So we had a BEAR report done, which is a burn area emergency response. Anything red is going to be our high severity. Anything yellow is going to be our moderate. What we want is that teal and that green. As you can see, there was a significant burn, and that was looking at that map and then understanding that there were zero structures, it doesn't quite fathom. And the fact that the morning or the day that really kicked off, the Kidder Creek camp was supposed to bring in their campers that Monday. And to understand that, again, no one was hurt and there were no structures, it actually defies my belief on that. We did have a very significant law enforcement presence from around the state, and we also have very significant law enforcement or fire support teams from all around the country and all around California. One personal story was getting home one night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the Ventura fire teams were out there checking. They were checking our fire hydrants, clearing brush, and just really doing a lot of mitigation work in and around the Etna area. So that was one thing that we had a lot of pine needles, a lot of scrub brush, a lot of brush that needed to be cleaned, and having those fire teams, once they started to get a better handle on it and doing structure protection, a huge thanks to those guys who are now currently fighting their own battle down there with the fires in Southern California. Next slide, please. So this is the vegetation mortality. One thing, it is greater than 75%, so we see that red, and that's not what we want, obviously. When it was burning hot, it was incredibly hot, and it was torching. There were some 300-foot torches off the top of the trees. And at one point, CAL FIRE said, I don't know how we're going to stop this, and that was at one point when it was coming down into the pines. That was a long night, and one of those that you are just you're hoping for the best on that one, and making sure that you're going through that checklist and making sure that the folks are out of the area, making sure that people who were evacuated were evacuated. That was a challenge across the board. It was also very impacted to some harvestable timber as well. So the timber companies did have effect on both sides of that, especially when it started to turn and move towards that northern, kind of that northwest side. With that, we also lost revenue to the Kidder Creek camp, and also there was multiple other events planned throughout the Scott Valley that were also had to be postponed and moved. Next slide. So there's still being a lot of work. I was up there last week, and the Kidder main stem has, there's still a lot of burnt timber up there. There's still a lot of debris that needs to come down. There is work being continuously pushed forward right now through the Forest Service. The erosion control is going to be the biggest challenges right now, because there are two, Patterson and Kidder, will definitely see the effects of that. If you've not been in the valley, both of those are not running yet. I was driving by this morning and quickly stopped to see if we got any flow there, but nothing yet. So once that does start to get a little bit more flow, we start to see some more significant rains, we'll see what's come off that, the burn debris. Again, prescribed burns happening, mitigation projects throughout, and then the Scott Valley has a lot of prescribed burns happening right now, and they're trying to basically shore up and tighten up all the fire breaks that have already been created in the area. And the goal will be to use the fire break that were created in an emergency and in haste, and then use those as usable fire breaks moving forward. Next slide. So lessons learned. What did we learn from all of this? Alert warnings, we can send those quicker. We tighten up and use all language. One thing that we really wanted to move forward on that is being able to use language for any language barriers, and our new program does that. It's outstanding. We can pick a language and send that out as well without having to translate it. Our zones and layering. So GIS and Genesis Protect, this has been a very huge, significant point for us. About mid-fire, not even mid-fire, it's probably late fire, we had the ability to add the structures of all of our structures in Siskiyou County and layer them in with Zone Haven and Genesis Protect. So prior to that, when we built our zones, we basically built them off of watersheds and what the best access to get out of those watersheds during a fire, without taking into account any buildings. We now have that ability to take the buildings, we drop that layer into Zone Haven, and use layering to understand what and where our valuables or our values at risk are gonna sit. The partnership and the stakeholders across the valley, it was outstanding. Just to have that support. Tensions are always high during a fire. Folks are always at the highest level of stress. And to be able to get a handshake and get a thank you when I'm grabbing coffee for the 20th time that day was pretty solid for me. One thing, we had multiple impromptu community meetings, myself and Allie, grabbing coffee and people asking questions and gathering everyone around and just having that impromptu community meeting, which really just sets the tone of Scott Valley. It's just that much of a community. And then again, the huge support from the CAO staff, the Emergency Operations Center staffing was critical. And then to have some new faces in there that were outstanding and ready to go, like, what do we got to do? Like, this is a 12-hour day? Great, I'll be here all day. I'm not leaving until you leave. That for us, that warms my heart in the best way possible. So one thing to talk about on that is that. The GIS layering really worked well, that most people forgot about this, but we had another fire called the Boise Fire that started in Humboldt and moved over. And I want to talk about this because this is really important. Our GIS layering, we were able to cut those zones in half and use, so at one point, one of the zones basically encompassed all of Sawyer's Bar, also Forks of the Salmon, and the fire was still about 12 to 14 miles away. We were able to cut those zones up and use that to our advantage and create new zones with that. We have a meeting in January with all the local fire and police chiefs to do that again. And what we're going to do is we're going to cut up those zones into smaller, more usable chunks. And the one thing that I saw worked really well in the park fire is they labeled everything. So we only used to label if it was a incorporated city, and now we're going to, so Greenview, everything will be labeled because that's what people know. If I say zone SIS 7203 and you live in Greenville, you don't know that. So, but if I know that Greenville, and I don't really know my zone, but I do know that, Greenville, I should probably go. So that is our goal for this year. That is our plan in January, is to chop those up and make them a more usable, palatable piece of information that we can use. Again, this is a learning process, so we were the first real county to adopt Genesis / Zonehaven and use it as a rural county. And they ask us a lot for advice moving forward because we've gotten pretty good at it. However, lessons learned show that we want to be able to cut pieces out that are more usable, as we saw in the Forks of the Sand and the Boise Fire. So Boise Fire ended up being 12,913 acres, pretty significant runs in the beginning, and then weather, this has been a fantastic weather year. So we've had, it was really a nice burn. It just really got the understory. The Humboldt side was a little bit more affected than we were. We got kind of the better side of it. And then, well, we saw the July rains, and then we also saw rains again in August. In fact, we saw snow in August. So that really changed the basically what the Boise Fire was doing. So Boise Fire had the potential to be something really nasty and ended up being a great fire that really served the area well for future. So next question. Yeah, so with that, I will open it up to any questions. And hopefully that answered all of your questions.
You till last, is that all right? Supervisor Chris?
Yeah, I'll have a question.
Go ahead.
In the future, when you do the new zones,
yes,
in January, that meeting, we always ask for more, so it's always tempting for you to get up here. But when you get up, so McLeod, of course, not Shasta, or you can have it by area. I'm meeting South County, maybe one east or west, in order to invite more participation from those particular areas.
Yeah, so the way we did it in the past was a little rudimentary. We basically printed out a giant map, and we said, these are the little zones. What do we need to change in it? And we took Sharpies, and we cut it up according to roads and access of local knowledge, and that was, to me, the most important part of it, is having that local knowledge. A computer program is great, but local knowledge is going to surpass that every single day. So we have bridges that we couldn't pass a water tender over, as we found out in Scott Valley. So one of the things that has really been helpful for that is we'll do that again, but this time with the same layer with structures in and around that. And I think in the Boise Fire, we actually cut one zone, and there was like a guy's shed, and we like cut around his shed. So it was all structures were on one side, north and south.
For that meeting, an outreach to all the areas, is it going to be one meeting in Wairika or?
Oh, it's multiple. It's over a few weeks. Periods.
Yes. Multiple areas.
Yes.
That's all possible.
Yes. Thank you.
Supervisor Hogan?
I appreciate that every time we have an incident, you walk away with new information and a way to use that and move forward with it, because you know there's no sense in just sitting back and doing the same thing over and over again. We all know what that means. So that's great that you can continue to move forward, and we value that in you, that you're able to create something really good from something really bad, and we utilize that every time, and that's a really great thing that you're able to do for us.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. That 75% mortality, that's pretty serious.
Yes.
And it would be nice if we knew what was going to happen to all of that 75% of dead vegetation. Is that Forest Service responsibility? Is that private land?
So there's a mix of both. There's Forest Service and private land. I know private timber companies, they're already pulling logs out, trying to get some of that salvageable timber at least to wherever it needs to go to get recoup some of their cost on that. I think really for us, as we see across the county, and we've had multiple incidents and multiple incidents, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, They seem to be a little smaller, which I'll take. However, they are, the mortality rate is significantly increasing, and one of those is looking at some of the ideas that we've seen with like the biomass and using that forward. I will say this is probably the first year that we were able to catch up as OES, so we've been able to push more out onto the mitigation. I personally like the preparedness side and the mitigation side. I just don't ever get to do it because I'm always in the recovery and response side. But this year we've been able to sit back, close out a bunch of the things that we have pending and outstanding, and we were able to use that to start looking at some of these and start bringing some of that stuff to the county, that whole county approach.
Yeah, that those projects that we talked about the other day are things that we really need to be looking at to try to fix some of this.
Right, 100%. We can't just leave dead and standing.
No,
right.
10 years down the line is too late.
Yeah, 100%.
And some of those cool projects are we need to bring forward. So keep that in mind.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
No, I think most of the questions have been answered that I was going to ask. Thank you.
Supervisor Howell?
Thank you.
Here we go.
I understand this is a public thing. Today, but there's a more detailed AAR going to take place. I spoke with Grace Woodmassey last week about that. I appreciate the process. One of the things about the AAR and the lessons learned culture is being able to express what you experienced without qualification or fear of reprisal based on that, so that we can learn from that and move forward. And in that process, for the public, firefighters are about the only ones that do this as a profession, actually, an emergency response people. A lot of them don't, so they repeat the same mistakes, which is what keeps us alive. What's important to me going forward is that I want to take a look at a couple of things. One, I look at the severity map, and you know, it actually isn't surprising. Because it matches the research that's been done. I'm looking more at the mortality one. The mortality one would show it matches the research that's been done locally in the Klamath Mountains, where high severity occurs basically on south and east facing slopes, moderated by fuels. And so if you overlaid the Kidder fire on top of that with the second growth, with high severity east and south-facing slopes, and then put 3,500 foot elevation on it, you'd see that most of that's above 3,500 feet. And fire behavior greatly modifies when it dips down below that. Going forward, I'd like to see a more nimble process in the evacuations, and you already addressed it a bit with Boise, being able to hone those down smaller, because a lot of that attention that I got in public about evacuation was, I'm forced with, if I leave my home, can't come back, I'm not really in a threat zone, but the zone's so big, you know. That's most of the complaint I heard. And it left a lot of people scratching their heads going, well, I guess I'm going to have to burn my vacation leave right now or lose my job, or stay home or, you know, whatever. Going forward, I think the process when evacuation, if we hone those areas down smaller, that could cure some of that. But I'd also like to see a more nimble process that we look at, rather than maybe this conforming to the team's response, which is the one-day look kind of thing in the morning. But, you know, that's a team thing. And we shouldn't be dictated by a team and how we act as a county, because we're the ones responsible for public safety in these events. One of the things that drove me wild during the process was the team, the information I know the Sheriff's Department was getting with fire behavior was what the team expected, like in August, but it wasn't August. And teams are critically short in technical advice when it comes to fire behavior regarding fuels assessments. So as a result, we get the most conservative look, and which has the biggest impact on the public. And I think there's ways to get at that. I want to discuss that because we go to the AAR. It's critically important to be able to, for us to hone our skills locally so that we're not overreacting and not creating greater chaos with the book in this situation. Going forward, there's a couple things that I've got on the top of my list. Beyond that, one, we need to look at some kind of an ag pass regarding agricultural operations in the valley, because a lot of alfalfa fields, grazing areas, that kind of thing, that were really at no fire risk, where my producers had to get in and out in a pretty timely fashion. I think we can deal with that through an ag pass thing with the UC extension, and Grace is open to that. I look forward to putting some of that in place. The biggest thing going forward that I'm mostly concerned with, well, two things I'm really concerned. I'm concerned about flash flooding in Curry Creek, as we've discussed, going forward this spring with rain on snow events, because now we have a watershed that's basically a parking lot, you know, and that's how it's going to respond for quite a while, as far as the responsiveness of water. The other thing going forward is I've been in communication with Daniel Lindler, looking at their properties between South Kitter Creek and Deacon Lee, and that face that comes into the valley right now will yes. not be treated by them. And it's an economic issue where it's small timber, it's dead, it's on very steep slopes, and it will be a significant threat to the city of Etna and the Cheeseville area for the coming probably 20 years or more. So I'd welcome the entertainment from this board to look at maybe if it would aid a public declaration of a nuisance or an emergency there, to maybe free up some kind of emergency money to treat that slope that would be, I think, warranted in the future. I think that's it for me today. We'll be talking.
Excellent, we appreciate it. I do want to say thank you for leading the charge on that when we were pushing evacuations. It's never an easy thing for myself and Sheriff to tell somebody to leave their home. It's one of those things that it weighs on us very much in our few hours of sleep that we do get. But I think more importantly, the death of anyone is going to weigh on my conscience a lot more than someone just mad at me that they didn't get to go where they wanted to go at that time. So I think that's really important. We saw this, and in closing, I think a really good example of this and an after action is the Park Fire and how quickly the Park Fire moved. And we had it in July when it was moving. Good example for the board, in case you didn't know. The first day that they flew out to the Shelley Fire, they land, a helicopter, get out, and there was a bush tree on fire in a patch of snow. That's not normal, and that's not really how things are supposed to burn, but we're in Siskiyou County, and that's kind of what we've adopted. So one of the things that for us is just the, and the winds. The winds have just been so unpredictable in the valley. So having that, and again, lessons learned. This is stuff that we can take away and we can use better. One piece that we do use, I'm sure you've used it in your past, is hot wash, which is immediately after. It's non-attribution, and it is down and dirty, and it is the, what do you think about me, and how do we do this? And there are some days that I take some lashings on that, but that really helps us move forward and create a better product for the public, and that's really what this comes down to, is how do we do what we do, save lives, protect property and the environment, but also do it the most efficiently that is going to save taxpayer money. So I think that's ultimately our goal in my office.
Yeah, I just quickly, you can call it the grace of God, you can call it luck with this fire. The results would have been much different in August.
Yes, 100%. That rain.
We were dealing with fuels that were not cured yet, and we had rain.
Right.
It was a blessing.
Yes.
On top of this thing. Had this occurred in August, I know our fire models would have shown large losses.
It was very different.
Even into the outskirts of it.
100%.
Yeah. And I cautioned the public when I talked to them about don't be lulled to sleep with we were able to stop this. Because I fear we wouldn't be that lucky.
That is the dichotomy of my career choice, is that when you do it well, that people don't understand that you're doing your job well and that we are not, we're saving lives. But if I do my job terribly and there are loss of life, a loss of property, then we shouldn't have done this. So there is that.
And we're the only game in the state, so every resource ordered was built.
It was amazing. It was unbelievable to see how much stuff we had here.
So let's take it to public comment. Is there anyone online, just in case?
Showing them online.
Nothing online? Anyone in-house? Public comment?
Brandon.
Sure. Come on up, Brandon. Okay. You can fill out a blue card after.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't see that. Yeah, hi, I'm Brandon Falaz, and I farm and also run two motels with my wife in the city of Etna. So this was, literally in our backyard on multiple levels, and I'm also on the Etna City Council. With that said, I would have to say without a doubt, this was the most challenging summer of my recent memory, both from the standpoint of, right, as was mentioned earlier, the PCT traffic decreased, it didn't really come back. With the lodging business, we were thankful for some fire traffic, but when it was gone, no other tourists came through because of the perception throughout the state and with forest closures, right? So worst summer of lodging that we've had in 9 years. And then kind of compounded on that, on the farm side, as has been brought up, and I echo Supervisor Haupt's comments, with the lack of being nimble and the way that played out, and with the water regulations forced upon us by the state, we don't have the flexibility that we once had. There was no flexibility by the State Water Board of what can be extended on the back end because something happened on the front end, and that was bad. And then to add insult to injury of that, for me personally, as soon as we were allowed to go through, get our crop in, got water restarted, 3 hours later, pump burned up. Like, we could not have had a worse sequence of events short of fire actually reaching our property. So, I don't believe in crying over spilt milk, but I do believe in moving the glass in further from the edge of the table so we don't knock one over again. And I welcome the thought of how there could be, in a non-emergency setting such as now, through going forward, more local cooperation on how we can guide some things going forward that make it more workable for the locals. Right? It was very disheartening to see locals displaced from their homes in $300 night motels that they don't have, losing freezers full of meat, while you have out-of-area contractors literally having a discussion at the Farmhouse Bakery in Etna as to whether or not they should go to Fiji or Tahiti for vacation this year because of all the overtime they're making. That is a slap in the face of the locals that at that point don't know how to pay their bills anymore. Something has to change that creates more camaraderie on the local level. I'm also a licensed insurance agent. Most people don't know that. So, but fire insurance, as we all know in the state, is very difficult. I will never want to risk my life for a dollar. I totally understand that. On the flip side, I cannot, through any carrier right now, purchase fire insurance for our stored crops, which is hay and grain. Zero options, regardless of liking the premium or not, I cannot buy it. And to be locked out of my property where I have two water trucks, a D8 dozer that we're making a fire break on when a fire's 8.5 miles away at the time and so being told I can't protect that, that's not right to me. I had the fire move towards us and had we had those losses, we're talking about remortgaging property to come up, right? Insurance is the transference of risk. We had no ability to transfer that risk because we had no ability to buy insurance, and then we had no ability to attend to our stored product and put in our own line of defenses. That has to be a discussion for the future of what can change there. Just the typical house and garage is not the only structure or property that needs to be considered when we talk about protection. I think a lot of you know me, without a doubt, I'll be of a more positive tenor as we can try to talk about how we do things working forward. I think an ag pass is one of the tools that could help us move forward. I think I've had some conversations with the Supervisor Haupt regarding what would that fire activity have looked like in modeling had we had less than the amount of green and irrigated area and acres. Like, how much worse could that fire have been and been something that we weren't prepared to deal with or would have been more catastrophic had that happened. With that said, you know, I might submit some written comments later. I think probably most people here would know how to get a hold of me if they ever want my opinion. I'm usually not too horribly bashful in sharing it. And we'll move on from that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in-house?
So I appreciate the public's comments here. I think one of the things that comes to mind, you know, we got to start looking internally on how we handle things. And I'm going to use volunteer firefighters. They do a great job, but that's not an efficient model moving forward. We just had a municipal service review done at LAFCO. Again, once again, it talks about consolidation. And I really believe we got to we put some effort into that because they're our first responders. We're not going to wait for Caltrans. We are grateful, like you said, lucky by the grace of God, but that fire didn't happen. Look what's going on down there in Southern California with Stan and Liz. A couple of those, two or three throughout the state, who do you think is going to get the resources? Not Siskiyou County. So again, I'm just getting my soapbox about our local departments. We got to find a way to support them, evolve to whatever it's going to be. But this volunteer model that we have is not sustainable moving forward because you can't get the volunteers.
Supervisor, I 100% agree. This is one of those conversations that we seem to have every single season since I've been here for the last 4 years. So yeah, 4 years of the same conversation. And it's not getting easier and it's not getting better, it's getting worse, and we're getting communities affected by wildfire that just, in my mind, just never thought would happen, that we're possibly losing homes in my community than where I live. So, but I think that's a great point on that, is that there needs to be a greater discussion to this. And for me as an emergency manager, this encompasses all four phases of emergency management, and this is one of the things that we have to press forward is...
Perhaps we can look for some grants to facilitate consolidation 100%. And or whatever the model is, even if it's a seasonal thing, holiday to holiday, I mean, you know, whatever it is. People have to realize, and I'm talking about our constituents, it's going to cost them one way or another. You can't get insurance, there's a reason why you can't get insurance. You're going to have to accept the fact that when that model does change, you're going to be paying more for it. Because, like you said, it's a risk assessment thing.
100% agree.
This is my 18th year on the board. 18 years ago, Supervisor Armstrong at the time was beginning to talk about county fire. And so we've been talking about it ever since. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes that idea. I think mainly the constituents don't like the idea because there is a cost involved. But, we've said all along, you're either going to pay the insurance company or you're going to pay like a county fire. And I would think that county fire is going to be less expensive overall when it finally gets implemented. I appreciate the local districts that are expanding their boundaries, boundary to boundary now, so there's no holes in the county for service from a department. But we need to figure out a way to help. And this, I know, doesn't come directly to you, so please just bear with me. We need to figure out a way to streamline how they get through that process. And as you know, I know grants are involved, but I know it's a $25 upfront fee just to start the permitting process. So some of these volunteer departments don't have that for LAFCO. So I don't know how we begin to deal with that. I mean, I don't know how. Some of the volunteer departments like Hammond, the Vista, Mount Shasta Forest, they have fees associated with fire response, amongst others. I know there's others out there, but it's still not enough. You're just barely keeping the wheels on the rigs with the type of money that's going out there. And we just need to have a broader discussion about this, and hopefully not 18 years from now, we'll have it in place. It would really be helpful to begin to start putting something on the ballot, even with regard to a question about county fire, and start to promote it. So,
public safety isn't cheap, and we know that, right? Public safety costs money, and it's one of those things that people don't want until you need it.
Yeah,
and it's exactly that, and it's the same. It falls under that.
And I was at the Hammond annual meeting here last weekend, and one of the things, CAL FIRE was there, and, you know, we get these inspections, And somewhere along the line, and again, it's not on you, but you are in that dialogue, so there has to be a thread from that certificate that they give you your okay vegetation-wise to the insurance companies, and even the insurance companies adding questions to that certificate when it's issued. But then it should also go to Department of Forestry, I think it is, or CAL FIRE itself, that draw the high severity fire maps so that we can chip away at that, because that's the other factor that we got hit with when that map came out. The insurance companies said, "Ooh, this is good. We're going to raise rates based on this map." So, and that's how we got stuck, right? So anyway, we have to thread this needle somewhere, and hopefully in the next year we can at least get something moving. Yes, go ahead.
I'll help you with a couple of things. Maybe, you know, one thing is I don't know any possibility here, but I don't know of other counties, maybe you do, Brian, that have participating agreements with, like CAL FIRE has with the Forest Service. If there's counties that have that, you know, that would be one funding mechanism in these responses. But quite frankly, I'm running out of whole volunteers.
Yeah, you can't get new ones.
I can't get any. I mean, they're not physically able to do this job anymore.
Yeah.
And my young population has moved away for jobs.
Yeah.
You know, so there's not a replenishment there. And it's a critical issue downriver and in Scott Valley. I support looking
county-wise. Yeah, it's county-wise. Yeah.
Because we're going to have to do this. I have constituents paying $6,000 a year for homeowners insurance.
I've got some that are $10,000 and $12,000.
And the one thing I will say is I can share that with the rest of the board, but State Farm, my insurance agent, for my homeowners insurance, has about a 10-item list of deductions if you do certain things around your home. Mm-hmm. And I show that to them with my inspection when I get CAL FIRE to do the inspection. Mm-hmm. And they put the deductions on my homeowner's policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, we're probably not going to solve it today.
No,
but we're certainly going
to
try.
We need to start the dialogue because it's gone too long.
Yeah.
And I don't want to diminish, you know, what we've talked about on the Shelley fire. But it's kind of an add-on. And I don't know. The only other thing I would add to the Shelley fire, I know public safety is of the utmost to your department and to the sheriff's department, but somehow we need to also remember John Q. Public, and that we live with John Q. Public here. Yes, we're here for their public safety, but we need to be able to dialogue with them in a way as though we're not the feds coming in and, you know, doing our own thing. I know that's a difficult spot. I'm not diminishing your role, but we can't forget, you know, who we serve here as well. So, anyway.
One more thing.
Sure.
One more thing on team dynamic. As a team, our motto is sort order out of chaos, okay? And part of that is reducing complexity. And you are the sheriff's department, the county, we're always going to get the most conservative interpretation of public safety out of them, but we're going to have to sort out balance in there, because what they want, they want the public out of the way because it reduces their complexity. It doesn't mean the public's necessarily in the way. It's just something else they have to keep track of. So we need to be cognizant of that when we're responding.
Just one comment. So I think this warrants further discussion. Maybe after the beginning of the year, let's be a little bit more proactive than reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Have the discussion. How are we going to improve the situation moving forward?
Absolutely.
That would be just maybe the incoming chair going to think about agendizing that somewhere.
Somebody put it on the agenda for next year.
All
it's
right.
Done.
First week or second week in February.
Sounds good. And one last bit. We did get a few weeks ago, we did get approved for CDA for California Disaster Assistance Act. When we originally placed that state of emergency, there was a no, and I sent an appeal, and then I sent kind of one more phone call appeal, and we did end up getting it. Governor Newsom did lump us in with that, so that will greatly help our cost share.
Good.
So, yeah.
Supervisor Chris, anything further?
Yeah, I'll jump. Yeah, thank you.
Go.
Since I won't be here in February, I'll be out there. I have all 3 minutes, so.
You can have public comment.
Public comment. One thing that fire departments do face is you have someone takes over as chief, and they're good at the kit. They can fix an engine. They can do all that sorts of stuff. But we're asking chiefs to do everything on a very small budget or a small salary. Those grants opportunities out there. Supervisor Valenzuela did this with CSAC for the grants. If there was a center within the county to be either the grant administrator or the grant seeker for these rural fire departments, it would be an additional tool that those fire departments don't have to tap into that. I know you're helping already informally in a lot of ways, but having that safer grant, and usually the departments that need it the most are the ones that don't have the grant bot person to do the grants. So that would be maybe a dollar of investment here that generates $10 worth of revenue in regards to services and those sorts of things out there. I think one of the things that's kind of held us up on either the county fire department or the solution is we tend to let the perfect get in the way of the good. So there's not going to be that silver bullet. It's tapping into all those different aspects. I know a lot of fire departments, I don't know if they're all doing it, but they're doing what's called the BEAT model. So you may have a person of a certain age, they're not able to put on an SCBA and go into a burning building anymore. So it's all or nothing fire departments. But you might have people that volunteer, wear the pager, but they'll drive the water tender. So there's 3,500 gallons of water that can meet CAL FIRE that has a 500-gallon water engine to put out that fire in the beginning. So they're doing it to volunteer fire departments. So a lot of them do it here in the county, too, where they take people of their ability and they put them in that ability to deliver that good out there, and they limit where they're at.
No, I agree. We do a great job with what we have. We need more.
Because we are aging out. We have a few that they're not going to charge in the building anymore, but if they get the tender there, that's a great tool for the team.
Supervisor Ogden, anything for you?
No.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, 7B.
Public for Karen. For Karen.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Wait, sorry. Karen Potts from First Five missed public comment. Her clock was set the wrong time, right? Good morning.
Yeah, just good morning.
Is this for me for tomorrow?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to quickly make a comment.
And just your name for the record.
Oh, thank you. Karen Potts, Executive Director of First Five Siskiyou Children and Families Commission.
Yeah. I'm Teresa Johnson, County Librarian, Siskiyou County.
And I'm Deborah Davis, the literacy program coordinator at the library.
So we're super excited to have the 17th annual Read Across Siskiyou event tomorrow. We appreciate, we thought we were on the agenda but missed it. We would appreciate you considering adopting a proclamation at your next meeting for Read Across Siskiyou and just the importance of early literacy. But for now, I'm excited to share that this partnership with the Siskiyou County Library is growing. Our collaboration is growing through playgroups at the libraries and other ways that we can connect with each other. And then for Read Across Siskiyou, thank you to each one of you for volunteering to be a guest reader. We had an overwhelming response around the guest readers this year. And really appreciate that each one of you were available to be readers this year. Please, if anyone is interested, we're partnering with the YMCA tomorrow evening to do a family dance party and dinner and story time. So it's from 5:30 to 7:30. If anybody is available to come, we'd love to have you. I have some books here for the guests or the public, as well as for each one of you. Thank you.
I just wanted to add that we have our Wednesday morning story time at the library from 11 to 12, and tomorrow, Read Across America, we will also be having a reading there, as well as all the other, how many other libraries are there? A few. I know there's one in South and Aetna, and some of the other libraries are also participating.
Including Dunsmuir and Mount Pleasant.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks. So
Karen, if you've got one of the books, I'll take it for
yes,
my file.
Absolutely.
All right. Now we're going to go to 7B, County Administration.
Sherry Lawson, Deputy County Administrator, Chief Fiscal Officer. I am here today to seek your approval in awarding a bid to Tyler Technologies to replace the county's current ERP system banner and move forward with contract negotiations, authorizing the county administrator or her designee to negotiate that contract for implementation and any modules that are going to enhance our county's operations. How we got here today, I'll be brief. We put an RFP out in April seeking vendors to replace banner. We had three vendors respond. The team that evaluated the proposals deemed every proposal responsive. It was really hard to get a feel for what the software would be like just from reading paper, so we invited each vendor to come to the county. So they came to our office in September, and in October we received a presentation from all three proposers. The members who were able to attend every software demonstration really felt strongly that Tyler Technologies was going to meet the county's needs. They were hands down our top proposer, so we moved forward with reference checks. I reached out to Napa County, Del Norte County, Marin County, and the city of Oxnard. Two of those counties already are using Tyler Technologies. The city of Oxnard and Del Norte are in the implementation process. During those conversations, end result was that each of those individuals that I spoke with recommended Tyler Technologies, so they didn't have any problems. I thought that would be a good choice for the county. So that brings me here today. I know normally a lot of times we wouldn't come to the board to ask to award a bid. However, this is a monumental change for the county because we're talking about replacing our finance. We're talking about replacing potentially our HR, human resources, timekeeping. So Tyler Technologies offers full integration to where we could get rid of MioGov, to where we can get rid of Kronos. So it will be fully integrated. Everything communicates. Their ERP system really is going to take us, I'm hopeful that this is going to take us to the next level. I don't know how much I actually need to sell it to you. I'm very excited about it. It's going to streamline processes that we do by hand right now or that we just don't do. It's going to really reduce redundancy from county staff, from staff entering invoices. So it is a little more on the spendy side, but if you look at the cost analysis that I prepared for this meeting, Tyler Technologies, everything is wrapped into one package for one price. It's all cloud-based, whereas with Banner, we pay for Banner. We pay for an export software. We pay for software that we can see our invoice images. We pay for check printing software. We pay for HR. So all of that is wrapped into Tyler Technologies. I've met with the internal stakeholders who would be responsible for this implementation. They're on board. They're 100% ready to go. There's no doubt that this is going to be maybe a little bit painful. There will be some bumps along the way, I'm sure, as there would be with any kind of, you know, ERP replacement. But I really feel strongly that this is in the county's best interest, and it is something that's just it's going to take us to the next level, and there's no reason why we should be doing things by hand right now in this day and age when we can, with a click of a button, just get it done.
So,
how long have we been talking about this?
Too long.
Yeah.
Too long.
And mm-hmm. I know now this outfit is going to do the programming.
Yeah. So, sorry, and I did forget to mention, yes, they will do the programming. It is not customizable, so they won't write custom scripts like we have with Banner.
Yeah. So they have an Excel sheet to go with it.
Correct. Every customer gets the same thing, no matter what. So if we call for support, they will be able to help us.
So they're not. We're not going to purchase it, and they're going to come in and put it in and say, see ya.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct, yeah. And one thing that set them apart as one of the top proposers is they solely focus on the public sector. So they are focused on counties, on cities, on small local governments. They have a particular emphasis in California. So they're aware of CalPERS reporting requirements, of auditor, state controller reporting requirements. They have a team that is regularly developing and updating the reporting requirements. So anytime a county gets in to do, say, an auditor controller report, the form's already up to date, you put in the numbers, you hit print, and your report's done. So I'm very excited that they know local government in California.
I can't say enough how I appreciate this, because this has been a battle for too long, and not with regard to the department itself. It's just that, I mean, we've never had the money to be able to do this, mm-hmm. and to be able to provide for that, it's going to make everything so much more efficient. I mean, hopefully the $1.50 they put on postage for a reimbursement check can be eliminated as well. But anyway, I see the CAO wants to chime in.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. I just also wanted to make a point to recognize the effort of Sherry Lawson. Because she dedicated an enormous amount of time and effort to get here today. We talked about this when I first arrived, about how badly we wanted to move from Banner, and so Sherry took that lead and just ran with it. So I just wanted to say thank you and to make sure she's recognized. It's not over yet,
no.
That she gets to now do the trend, but the effort that was put, we would not be here if it wasn't for her. So.
Anyone, any questions? If not, do you need a motion on this, or is it just information?
I do have a motion to select Tyler Technologies as the vendor of choice.
I'll make the recommended motion. What?
If I may, we can't be the
Are you going to kick in to help offset the
I'm
cost?
Just here to give kudos to this effort also. We have had Tyler Technologies inside of Environmental Health running our COOPA program for about 6 years, and it's been very, very good. Initially, the state came out with their own software to incorporate our environmental reporting system, and they had two that they sponsored, and they took cream off the top of it. Mm-hmm. Throughout the state, we recognized that they weren't that great, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Migrated to Tyler Technologies, been very happy, so.
And to add more, Tyler Technologies offers a licensing and permitting module that also integrates, so for building permits, environmental health permits, and that kind of thing.
Really?
It will also, in the future, potentially, if we adopt that module, help.
You won't even need a board of supervisors anymore at that rate, right?
Oh, there you go.
You can tell I'm excited. It's going to be hard, and we should not do hard things because they're hard,
no,
but...
No. You got to do this.
I'm excited to be involved in this.
You got to do it. Call for the vote.
Okay. Supervisor Help?
Can I vote twice? Yes.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
I'll be aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Absolutely.
And Supervisor Copson?
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
We still good to go? Keep going through here? I want to...
Yeah, let's get through this next one, because I know we're going to have some public hearings coming up.
We're at 7C, County Administration.
Good morning, board members. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator.
I'm going to walk you through a hopefully brief but detailed background of why I'm here today. And my goal is to have you as excited as you were with Sherry's presentation by the end of it.
Good luck.
A girl can dream. So,
go.
So, in the fall of 2023, an application was submitted to the Siskiyou LAFCO by Rick Evans to increase the size of a city Wairika lot from 2.12 acres to 5.21 acres through the annexation into the city of approximately 3 acres from a second parcel in the unincorporated area of Siskiyou County. The area to be annexed to the city generates approximately $40 per year in 1% property tax. However, only a portion of that amount is subject to negotiation and allocation between the city and the county. The portion subject to negotiation is the Siskiyou County General Fund portion of the base property tax, which is approximately $14.38 a year, and two, the South Wairika Fire Protection District portion of the base property tax, which is approximately $2.29 a year. The city and the county entered into the initial 60-day statutory negotiation period between the city and the county to hopefully come to a resolution to enter into a tax sharing agreement. During that time, however, the city and the county did not come to an agreement. Negotiations between the parties during this time proceeded in the following way. The county proposed 100% retention of the base and splitting the increment 50-50 with the city. This is consistent with County Resolution 24-104. The city rejected this proposal and countered with the city and county splitting the base 50-50 and splitting the increment 75% to the city and 25% to the county. County staff rejected this proposal and countered with its original proposal plus an added transient occupancy tax or TOT provision to equally split TOT if the annexation area is rezoned for temporary lodging uses. Following this, the city did not respond with a counteroffer, and the extended negotiation period ended on May 5th, 2024, without the parties reaching an agreement. In this event, when a city and county cannot reach an agreement within the negotiated time period, there are several steps for several next sequential steps for the parties to take, with the first being a third-party fiscal analysis, followed by a mediator, and then finally an arbitrator. Given the costs associated with the dispute resolution process, or the process that I just outlined, and remaining cognizant that LAFCO and Mr. Evans were awaiting action by the city and the county, on May 29th of this year, in an attempt to get the parties closer to resolution, county staff made a counteroffer to the city that removed the TOT from the proposed tax exchange resolution and returned to the county's original proposal, which kept 100% of the base and 50-50 split increment. Again, that's consistent with the county's resolution. On June 4th, city staff rejected the county's counteroffer. On July 15th, the parties entered into an agreement with Berkson Associates to provide third-party fiscal consultation services and begin the sequential steps of the dispute resolution process. On July 31st, Richard Berksom provided the first phase of a draft report for this negotiation, which provided property tax options to the city and the county. Following this draft report on August 19th, the county, city, and Richard Berksom had a meeting to discuss the draft report and clarify some of the language in the draft tax sharing agreement. On August 19th, county staff followed up to this meeting with a revised tax sharing agreement that clarified some of the language. So it kept the original language, but it stated that the county shall retain 100% of the general fund portion of the base property tax. It added that the city shall be allocated the South Wairika Fire Protection District's portion, approximately $2.29. And it stated that the incremental property tax revenues available for allocation, which includes the Siskiyou County General Fund and South Wairika Fire Protection District portion, shall be allocated
50% to the city and 50% to the county. The city did not respond to the county's revised offer, and it has not responded to other offers since that date. On October 14th, Richard Berkson provided the second phase of the draft fiscal analysis, which included a county budget analysis. I want to read directly from a portion of this analysis. It's very important. It states, if the annex property remains undeveloped, the current unincorporated property taxes, the base taxes to the county and South Yreka Fire Protection District are required to avoid fiscal impacts that would otherwise be caused by the loss of existing property tax. In the event of future development of the annex property, the fiscal analysis shows that the county requires 45.2% of future property tax increment from the site to mitigate its net cost of services to new residents. For myself, that just is indicative that our proposals have, our consistent proposal for the base property tax and the increments have been valid. On October 24th, the county and the city had yet another meeting to discuss the second phase of the fiscal analysis, during which the county again provided city staff with its revised offer. No agreement has been reached, and the city proposes to begin outreach to mediators and arbitrators for the next steps. So while there remains the final phase of the fiscal analysis left to complete, based on previous discussions, it is unknown whether an agreement can be reached between county and city staff. If no agreement is reached, the next phase of the process includes a mediation between the parties with a mediator and then engaging in the arbitration process. These process and proceedings are expected to have a significant cost to both the county and the city. In addition, at the end of this process, it is not required that the county and the city reach an agreement, and the annexation may still not proceed. In another effort to reach an agreement with the city for the Evans annexation tax sharing agreement and to conserve scarce resources, county staff is therefore today recommending that the board approve the attached to the item draft tax sharing resolution, which outlines county shall retain 100% of the general fund portion of the base property tax revenues, approximately $14.38. The city shall be allocated 100% of the South Yreka Fire Protection District portion, approximately $2.29 of the base property tax revenue. The incremental property tax revenues associated with the Siskiyou County General Fund shall be allocated 50% to the city and 50% to the county, and consistent with the city receiving 100% of South Yreka's portion, the incremental property tax revenues associated with South Yreka Fire Protection District shall be allocated 100% to the city. If this draft resolution agreement is approved by the board, the county will provide the tax sharing resolution and the staff report to both the city of Yreka and the city mayor. One final point is that the cost of the fiscal analysis, the phase we are currently in, is $27,500 to be split equally between the city and the county. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
So with regard to, and thank you, very well done outlining that. The $27,000 was split between the city and the county.
Correct.
Now, the next phase is if we continue to go down this path, because for me this is insane. We're talking $16 a year, and yes, it would be easy to say, yeah, just give it to them because it's only $16. But the bottom line here is it's precedent setting, and we have to draw a line in the sand. We've already spent $13,500. And if we go into arbitration and mediation, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars. The insanity of this is just beyond my belief that we could even be having this dialogue. How do we stop this process? I know this is state code. How do we stop it, and how does the board vote to stop this, even outside of what the code would allow?
So, Natalie Reed, County Council. The fiscal analysis mediation arbitration process that the county is in with the city was meant by the legislature to be time consuming and expensive to induce the county and city to reach a voluntary resolution. And that is the only exit to the process, is if the parties come to agreement prior to reaching the end step. If the parties reach the arbitration phase, then arbitrator will consider essentially final best offers from each, will select one, and then the city and county would return to their, you know, boards. And if the board does not intend to adopt it, you hold a public hearing and you adopt findings as to why you aren't selecting that final offer. So ultimately, the decision will rest with you, but the only early exit to the process is reaching an agreement with the city.
So even if we go through this entire process, it's still non-binding on the county's part, correct?
Correct. The arbitration is adjudicated in the sense that a final best offer will be selected, but ultimately you will retain essentially a veto power.
So how does the board vote on this besides what we're doing today to just say stop the process, because financially it's a burden to the county? Because we're talking, you know, upwards of $100,000 to $150,000.
If the board intended to take a vote to not participate or defund the process, then I would ask that you continue this item so that I have the opportunity to provide you with legal advice prior to taking such a vote.
Could you have something for the next meeting in December?
Yes, I would ask that you continue it to December 3rd.
Okay. Any other questions from the board?
Just a comment. It's really unfathomable to me that we are stuck in a spot where, to me, we're talking over money that was, yeah, I get what you say with the state, but they were talking about not $29, but $2.9 million or $290,000. They're not talking about that. I can only imagine what this must look like, even to the arbitrator, the mediator type thing. I think a little time. I think there should be some kind of back channel discussion. Is this really the path? It's one of the reasons why I asked, and I hope we have sent the letter out to all the entities. Hey, this is our policy. You know, so and it's too bad, you know, again, we're not proactive enough that we should have done this before this happened, because then we would have had something to stand on. I would just say I am personally willing to say, okay, fine, you're going to get that. They drew a line in the sand. Moving forward, it will be this policy that we've initiated. That's where I'm at with that, because I can't justify spending this amount of money for $14 a year.
Supervisor Chris?
Yeah, I just had a question with South Wairika. Have they been a consultant on this, or is this...
Yes. The county in this process negotiates on South Wairika's behalf, but we are required to notify them, and we have done so. We sent a letter to them. I also had a brief discussion with their fire chief. We did not receive a response back in writing, but at the time of discussion, there didn't appear to be a concern from the fire chief's end.
Okay.
But we have consulted with them.
Right. In regards to that letter that was sent out, I had the pleasure of attending one city council meeting where I got asked quite a bit about it.
Oh.
Which was fine. I enjoyed this. So it was there with the city. They were asking questions on it. Maybe for the, not as much for Wairika, but for maybe the outlying communities. There's always when it goes to I-5, it's just human nature of it. But there's an explanation of what we are actually covering under that 45.2% to show the, and that was my argument, not my argument, it's my explanation to the city council. I says, even though you may take over this land, we still have to meet certain essential needs within this area. And just if there was a list or something, these were the things. I talked about fire dispatch and those things. That's something that explained the areas.
So
what we're covering with it, because like we're covering, for example, fire dispatch for all the communities outside of it. Right. So it's things that we do cover.
Yes.
Just so they know about it down the road.
So we did not just include that detail in the letters we sent out to the cities. However, the detail of what we would still be required to cover for this piece of property in particular is detailed in Mr. Bergson's report. it would likely be somewhat similar in other areas, but it depends on where the property is and what services cover that area.
So be unique to each area, or same, there'd be some variance? Do you think it'd be much variance? Or?
I don't want to say what the variance would be, but
that would help us out in the future, especially in the beginning of some of the cities, to say this is what we have to cover, we have to have a certain base of a certain dollar figure, et cetera.
I'll go to Supervisor Howe. Anything?
I had a precedent concern. I've kind of hemmed in on Scott Bell area plan, and the only way out of that is for Fort Jones and Etna to expand. And I'm aware of a couple of fairly large expansive proposals around Fort Jones that would bring significant revenue. I don't want to set a negative precedent here that they're going to pile on with. I guess my question is, I'm trying to understand all this back and forth. What exactly would I be approving today?
So you would be approving the attached resolution to this agenda item. And
which catapults us into?
Which catapults us into nothing at this phase, because we would be approving it. However, this has not gone before the city for their approval, and so that us approving it today or the board approving it today would not mean that we reach an agreement, but hopefully it's a signal to the city and we would provide that to the city council.
Through the chair.
Go ahead.
Mount Airy County Council, and that's correct. So each, the city and the county, each has to adopt a resolution. And so this would just be the county having completed that part. And so to exit, it's simpler. The city just has to approve it.
Right.
And then you exit.
Right. It's more formal, I guess, is the bottom line, is what we're saying.
So as I read through that, then it's just a formalization of a resolution?
Yes.
Okay.
That can be changed at any time if had need. We would have to be sending.
You can adopt adopt a resolution overriding that one with different terms.
So you want to open?
So not to beat a dead horse, but you know, we've been talking about this forever, and one thing that has come of it is that we've learned a lot about how these processes work and about property taxes and annexation and how these numbers work, which we thought we knew, but we didn't exactly know. So this has kind of been an interesting process in my eyes. I agree with Supervisor Chris in that the information about the services has been a big question from the city. And that I'm not sure that they truly understand what those services are that we're providing, and that question has come to me a number of times, and I'm not sure that they're satisfied with the answer.
So they are provided the same report that we receive, and then we have discussed it during a meeting in October with them, what those services the county is still required to provide.
Okay. I'm satisfied with that. They're just, you know, they still have their feelings hurt, I guess. I don't know. Or they're just still not satisfied, and it is what it is. I'm okay with a resolution because it's just a resolution, and we can change it if we want to or not. And it's going to be up to the city to decide if they want to move forward or not. It's, to me, ridiculous that we have to spend this kind of money to come up with a decision that we should be able to come to an agreement on over. Again, it's a precedent, and that's the issue. It's not about this $15. It's moving forward. We just have to come up with a plan and stick with it. And whether it's $15 or $15,000, it doesn't matter. So, correct.
So we have a resolution in place that says...
So you have a resolution in place that details how this county will enter into tax sharing agreements in general. Mm-hmm. Then a follow-up, there was a letter to each city informing each incorporated city in the county of that resolution, providing a copy of it. And then this resolution or resolution slash agreement is specific to this property, this annexation.
Right.
Correct.
So go ahead, Amanda.
That was going to be my question. It just, the title of Attachment 5 is a tax sharing agreement. There's no resolution that I'm aware of, other than the copy of 24-104 that was adopted.
Well, I believe the tax sharing agreement they refer to it is a resolution.
As a resolution slash tax sharing agreement. Okay, I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right thing.
You are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Council?
So it sounds like if the board would, or the, if the chair was going to call for a vote about defunding, that I would ask that you motion to continue this to December 3rd. So I have it.
So with regard to this agreement, though, that's here, can we act both ways? Can we potentially vote on this agreement and then continue this to the discussion that you're asked about a vote on defunding?
Yes.
We can.
If you would like to take action today on the resolution and then continue okay. for further okay. discussion
so
on
let's,
other issues.
So let's take that first.
Okay. Can I follow up?
Go ahead.
To me, we're just trying to be strategic here. I still think, I mean, hey, I'll give them the $14 for God's sakes. I mean, well, just, come on. Would it be, if we were to pass that, would that force them to have to bring it to their council? Because, you know, I would love to know what the other side is thinking.
No, it would not force them to bring it
okay.
to their council. However, the county is looking for every opportunity to resolve this consistent with our resolution. And at this point, it has become clear
sure.
that staff-to-staff negotiations have not
okay.
resulted in that.
Okay. Supervisor Fogren.
Do you believe that if we do approve the resolution today, that it would be in good faith and that would go back to them with... It would give them incentive?
In my view, it's good faith. However, I did inform the city manager that we were bringing this item to the board today, and I did not receive a response. So I don't know on their end.
Supervisor Balance.
Well, I'm just surprised that this is on the agenda. Why wouldn't they have a representative to give it to say something? Okay.
I guess you'd have to ask them. But I guess the bottom line is this formalizes what we've all been talking about here and there, and... So the bottom line is it needs to get to the city council.
Yes.
And that's, I think, what the intent is with this resolution.
Yes.
Okay.
My preference would be to get county council to see it and maybe bring this back on the 3rd.
Well, right now I'm talking about the resolution.
No, I'm just saying, but I would like to see that come back. If that's
the resolution?
Yeah.
I'm not. Mm-hmm. I want to see the resolution. I'm supportive of doing the resolution today, and I would motion that. If I can get a second.
So essentially the recommended motion, approve
yes.
the tax sharing agreement and
yes.
authorize the chair to sign.
Correct.
Okay.
I'll second.
I think.
Second, yep.
Yep. Alrighty. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
I guess.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. And so then you bring...
So staff will agendize for the 3rd consideration of continued or not continued funding
right.
of the process.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to clarify, it's going to be a separate agenda item from this for the 3rd.
Correct. We'll just
okay.
create it.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Wendy?
Yes, if we could take a little break, that would be great.
All right, so my intent is to get through the rest of these before we break to go to closed and
yes,
lunch.
Please.
Is that good?
Yes.
We're on track for